This is Brian Forrester, and welcome to the Active Investor Podcast, part of Lord Abbett's Investment Conversation Series.
That's why we tend to use price momentum, just because it works. Now, as a practitioner, we know it works, but what's happened over the past several decades is that the academic research has also backed this up. You could use just fundamentals, or you could use just technicals and have a successful career. We think that the odds of success are increased when you combine the two.
In this podcast, we look at what we think are some of the most relevant near-term and longer-term drivers in the equity market. So, thinking about investor behavior, risk factors, how changing market dynamics tend to influence stock prices, and really where some of the big mega trends are building. And in today's episode, we are going to be taking a little bit of a detour from what we almost always talk about, you know, some aspect of fundamentals, whether it's market or company. And instead, we'll be discussing a topic that has gained a lot more visibility in recent decade, and that's price momentum, or the behavior of stocks. And a few weeks ago, Lord Abbett participated in a pensions and investments virtual conference with a group of, I would say, very distinguished institutional investors, as well as two world-renowned academics who really pioneered much of the work on price momentum that has driven a much deeper understanding of the factor. Professors Jagadeesh and Tipman wrote a seminal paper in 1993 called Returns to Buying Winners and Selling Losers, as well as a number of follow-up pieces on the powerful empirical evidence that momentum is a persistent and successful factor in equity markets. So from Lord Abbett, both myself and our resident guru on price momentum, Vernon Bice, presented on how we think about and implement momentum in our innovation equity portfolios, and then also engage in a discussion with other panelists. And a replay of that webinar is now available on the insights section of lordabbott.com. So today we're going to dive into a lot of the topics we covered on that webinar, as well as a white paper we're publishing in the next month. And wouldn't you know it, we have Vernon Bice here as today's guest on the podcast. So welcome, Vernon.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be on the show.
And so just to set the table for what we're going to cover today, first things first, why does momentum even exist in the first place? Why is it something that can be effective for some investment portfolios? What are the differences between absolute momentum and relative momentum? And how can they help portfolio managers make decisions? And then I think most importantly, we will discuss the application for investors. And we'll look particularly at how price momentum works best when it's integrated with operating or fundamental momentum. And I think that's something you actually don't hear nearly as often. But we think as practitioners that this is really at the heart of managing risk and opportunity successfully. So Vernon, you have been a portfolio manager at Lord Abbett on our innovation equity strategies. You're a CMT, or a chartered market technician. There's a lot of CFAs in the world, but not many chartered market technicians. And you are by far, I think, the most passionate and knowledgeable investor at this firm when it comes to momentum. So let's maybe start with how you came to this love for technicals and momentum. Sort of how did you come upon this path in life?
Well, sure, Brian. I got involved in investing by pure luck. In high school, my stepfather happened to be a reader of Investor's Business Daily. And he gave me this newspaper one day when we were driving around. I was working for him in his small produce business in Huntington, West Virginia. We're driving around. He gave me his newspaper and said, hey, you should look into stocks. You can make money if you invest in these companies that are doing really well and providing cool products and services. And I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. And so, you know, I think IBD, what that gave me, I started reading it. What it gave me was a passion and a foundation for growth investing, number one, and the use of fundamentals and technicals. That's the core of their process in Investor's Business Daily. Hmm. And I was hooked from the beginning. I loved the charts. I loved the fundamentals. I loved the exciting growth of these companies providing new products and services that are all around us. And so that turned into my passion, but I took a bit of a detour. I did go to college at Ohio State University. My undergrad was in nutrition science, and that was pretty much a pre-med track. And I did go and get into medical school for 1 year, but something was pulling me towards finance. So I decided to change careers, drop out of med school after a year, and move to New York and pursue finance. And I did that in January 2001. Great timing, right? And so fast forward to 2011, from that period of time, and I joined Lord Abbott. And now I find myself working on the innovation team focused solely on exploiting price momentum, which I find a dream come true.
Not the most natural progression there from nutrition science to price momentum, but definitely a very fascinating story. So let's get back to some of the work that you've done. And so just kind of thinking at a high level first, what is momentum? Why does it exist? And why use it?
Sure. I might rearrange the order there a bit.
Okay.
But sure. So momentum, if you just think about it, the concept is that prices that are trending tend to trend in that same fashion until a force acts against it to change that trend. So think three different trends, really, is what we're talking about. Stocks that are going up, stocks that are going down, or stocks that are going sideways. And what has been found in the literature is that those trends persist for longer than you expect until they revert. So why do we use it? The simple answer is because it works. You know, price momentum works. And just to state, one fact is that we're practitioners of momentum. We're not academics, but we've been doing this a long time. And we've learned from legends like Bill O'Neill, who started Investor's Business Daily. We've learned our process from him in terms of how to exploit momentum, both operating momentum and price momentum, using technicals and fundamentals. So I think that that's why we tend to use price momentum, just because it works. Now, as a practitioner, we know it works, but what's happened over the past several decades is that the academic research has also backed this up. So there's been a lot of research written. You referenced professors Jagadish and Tittman at the beginning of the podcast. Now they've some of these papers have gone back for centuries, hundreds of years, and shown that the existence of price momentum. And that brings us to your other question as to why price momentum exists. And I think it is because of behavioral factors. This is still a debated topic in the academic research, but I think if you look at the behavioral biases that we all have as human beings, I think that ties in well with price momentum and the reactions of stock. So it may be easier just to walk through a quick example. And I came across an interesting article a few years back that spoke about Isaac Newton, the genius behind the concept of physical momentum, had a tough time trying to chase price momentum in this stock specifically called South Sea Company, which he lost something like $2 or $3 million at the time in the stock. And it led to a famous quote that he had, which I've always remembered. He said that, "I can calculate the motions of the heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." And so what he was really talking about there was the human biases that we all possess as humans. We underestimate that fact when we go into investing. I think, you know, you learn all the ins and outs of how to invest, but you don't really understand the emotional and psychological strain that you're going to be under once you pull the trigger and buy a stock.
Right.
And so if you just think of an example, I'll walk through some of these common biases that I think help explain momentum. The first being conservatism bias. As humans, we're kind of cautious. We're skeptical. And we get new information and we might not immediately put it into the price of a company. So say a stock comes out and inflects on the operating momentum and says, we just grew 50% this quarter on sales. And I think that can continue for the next several quarters. Well, the analysts, the ones that come up with the estimates for the stocks, they may say 50%, that seems like a lot. I think we'll just stick with 25%.
Right.
And that conservatism bias really sets up for the next few quarters. If the company delivers on the fundamentals, it sets them up for beat and raises, which propels the stock higher. And as that's occurring, there's still some skepticism and doubt. But maybe 2, 3, 4 quarters in a row, if they're continuing to put up these nice earnings and sales numbers, the individual investors can't take it anymore. They have to get involved. And that kind of sets up an idea called herding bias, where a lot of people jump into the stock, which propels the stock even higher. Now, when analysts get comfortable seeing that the stock is working for a while, they might lead them into another bias called overconfidence bias. And now they're saying, well, maybe they can grow 50%. You know what? I think they can grow 60%. Mm-hmm. And that sets up for a potential of an overreaction and a situation where the company might end up missing the earnings estimates. And that is what typically starts the downfall of the stock.
Interesting. A lot of biases there that we're trying to overcome. I'd probably say Isaac Newton would also have done well to think about both the stock price momentum, but also the operating momentum of the South Sea Company. And as we kind of shift gears to thinking about the application of price momentum and pairing with fundamentals, one other interesting piece that we discussed on the Pensions and Investments webinar was another academic paper written by Robert Novy Marks in 2014, which looks at a number of concepts related to momentum. And, you know, you brought up us being practitioners. You know, from a practitioner's perspective, I think it really resonates with us. And one of the key charts in that paper hones in on how earnings momentum paired with stock price momentum has dominated against just pure price momentum, just kind of following whatever has done best over the prior year. And they look at it over a 60-year period. And so you can kind of picture a graph with three lines on it going up and to the right. It shows a lower line representing pure price momentum factor. So buy the top decile of what worked over the last year, short the bottom decile, and then see how it does over the next year. And that momentum factor that's often discussed is very powerful. It does very well over very long periods of time. But what is it really known for? Crashes, big volatility. So much so that it's almost never arbitraged away. You just can't stomach that level of volatility. It also then shows two other data series above it, showing much, much better performance and much, much less volatility. And what's going on there are data sets where the performance of the best performing stocks during earnings season are bought, the worst are shorted, and then again, what happens to that portfolio over the next 12 months? The other similar looking line, instead of looking at the stocks, looks at the company performance, which companies beat earnings by the most or expectations by the most, and then short those that missed by the most, and how did they perform over the next 12 months? And these rolling data series show that by looking at a combination of earnings momentum and price momentum, that it has a much more robust track record than stock price momentum by itself. So it's a powerful study and one that looks back into what we've been doing for the past 20 years now. Again, looking to own the emerging winners in innovation, both from a fundamental and technical standpoint. So, Vern, this idea of integrating price momentum and operating momentum, looking to tilt the scales, so to speak, in your favor in both bull and bear markets, that's often not talked about. And in the conference with P&I, you talked about this concept of confirmed momentum. So maybe can you give a Cliff Notes version of what we mean by that?
Yeah, sure. And I think you could use just fundamentals or you could use just technicals and have a successful career. But I think going back to our process and what you were just speaking of, we think that the odds of success are increased when you combine the two, fundamentals and technicals. And we also think that that dampens the volatility just from a practitioner's standpoint. So it aligns with what you were reading just now in the academic literature. And I think a couple examples could probably maybe make that make sense a little bit more. So let's just think if you were right on the fundamentals of a company, but got the timing of the stock wrong, then you're really in essence wrong on the right. on the stock. You know, right. It's you can't really until the market recognizes what you have found out or dug up, and the combination of having fundamentals and price momentum at the same time. Until that occurs, you're going to have a tough time making money, and you can be way too early. There's also a chance that you could just be wrong on the fundamental thesis, and what you've discovered may just not happen. So I think having both fundamentals and technicals are important. Now, let's go to the other side of the equation. Let's say that you just had technicals. You just use price momentum without the underpinnings of fundamentals. Then you could get into a situation where, like the meme stocks, mm-hmm. when those stocks went up a massive amount in a short period of time, but then turned down and gave it all up just as quickly. That was because there was really no fundamental backing behind those stocks. It was a lot of things going on in the Reddit boards or different types of bulletin boards giving advice to people that might not be professionals in investments. So I think that just going back to our process, combining both fundamentals and price momentum, that's what we think increases odds of success.
Gotcha. So we've been talking about some of this academic research out there, and I alluded to a couple of papers from Jagadish and Tipman, as well as Novi Marks. Is all primarily about relative momentum and sometimes called cross-sectional momentum. And that's really how a stock is performing relative to its peers or the whole market. Can you talk about how you think about both relative momentum and also what's not discussed as much, absolute momentum or time series momentum, and why that matters to a practitioner?
Yeah, sure. You know, as you just mentioned, most of the academic research focuses on studying relative momentum, and they do that by this 12 minus 1 month method. And basically what that is that they look at all stocks within the universe that they're measuring over the past 12 months, and then they take off the last month data just because of short-term volatility and mean reversion issues, and then they rank them. And the stocks in the top half on that ranking system, you go long, and the stocks on the bottom half, you go short. And the stocks that are in the top half tend to outperform the stocks in the bottom half. That's where most of the academic research has been focused on. They may look at different look back periods. They might look at 3 months, 6 months, but the gold standard, so to speak, is this 12 minus 1 month method. And so there's some shortcomings, I think, to that. And I think that the shortcomings are related to what if the market happens to turn in that last month of data that they're lobbing off, or what if the market crashes or momentum crashes? And those are two of the bigger risks that are associated with investing in momentum. And we think we can overcome those shortcomings by adding absolute momentum to the process, in addition to still using relative momentum. And what is absolute price momentum? Absolute price momentum is looking at a stock trend in relationship to itself. Mm-hmm. And so it's just think trend following. But just following price trends is easier in theory than it is in practice. So we've spent quite a few years trying to develop something, a process that's simple yet effective in order to be more dynamic than just using relative strength on its own.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as you think about even just the word momentum. I think for people who invested in stocks in the late 90s, it conjures up just sort of almost blind trend following and buying whatever's been going up most recently because your friend was making a lot of money and you want to participate, and then it ends badly. And mm-hmm. I think the way you're talking about momentum is a lot more a part of a process.
That's right.
That's looking to capture positive momentum when it's working, but also getting out of the way when you start to see things breaking down and
that's
looking
right.
to manage volatility. And so let's spend the last couple of minutes there. Implementation. What is the right framework, at least from your experience, for using price momentum for decision making? And I think, again, really that is what is often so difficult for investors and just humans in general, to take the emotion out and yet still using fundamentals. How do you kind of think about investing using price momentum, operating momentum, and sort of the different stages of a stock price?
Sure. Yeah, I think at the core of our process are these four stages of absolute momentum that we've designed. And every stock in the universe falls into one of these four categories that we call uptrends, pullbacks, downtrends, or snapbacks. And I think these categories can help investors overcome some of those more common behavioral biases that we just spoke about. So for example, the uptrend can help you overcome one of the biggest biases out there is called disposition bias. And all that's saying is that investors have a tendency to sell their winners too soon and hold their losers too long. And so this uptrend category helps us get away from selling our winners too soon. As long as the price is above an upward sloping 150-day moving average, which is the definition, our definition of an uptrend, we let it run. We relax. Just calm down. Don't panic. Don't sell too soon. And then, you know, we'll be knowing that we'll be alerted real time because we're using absolute momentum. We'll be alerted real time when that trend starts to wobble a bit, which is what we call a pullback. And that looks like a downtrend, except for the price is now below that upward sloping 150-day moving average. And that's what we call a pullback. So we know when that occurs, then we can take some money off the table. And on the flip side, hopefully by the time it gets to a downtrend, which is just when the price of a stock is below now a downward sloping 150-day moving average, hopefully we'll be out of that stock or very small. The way we avoid holding our losers too long is by, one, cutting it when it goes into a pullback, two, hopefully exiting it when it goes into a downtrend, and three, avoiding it that whole time that it stays in a downtrend. We won't try to buy the stock as it's plummeting. In other words, we'll wait for the final category to show up, which is a snapback. And that's when the price goes up through a downward sloping 150-day moving average. So,
okay. So four categories: uptrend, downtrend, pullback, snapback.
That's right.
We want to own the uptrends,
own the
ride
uptrends.
Winners, stay away from downtrends, even though that's what might be tempting, right?
That's to buy very things, tempting.
To buy things that are going down, you think they're getting cheaper.
That's right.
And then watch the reversals there.
That's right. Yep. So there's two major categories: uptrends, we want to let those run; downtrends, we want to cut those quickly; and then the two inflecting categories, snapbacks and pullbacks, to alert us to potential trend changes.
Gotcha.
That's the simplicity of the system, and I think it helps us be, you know, as consistent as we can and remove some of those biases and emotions that are so prevalent in investing. So maybe an example that I could walk through is the biotech ETF XBI. And from 2009 to 2015, the XBI went up 400%. But over the next following 7 months, it gave back 52%. And then it turned back up and went up 130% before pulling back not once, but twice, 30% in 2018, 2019. Then once again, it got some momentum behind it. It went up 180% during 2020 before starting to correct after the news of the vaccine in November 2020, and now we find it 40% off of its highs. So it's just that type of volatility that folks associate with growth investing, and why it's important, we think, to have this process that we have in place, because we could use absolute momentum to dampen some of that volatility by getting out of the way of those big drawdowns when they occurred, but not getting out of it too soon. So again, if you were to overlay those four categories over the XBI, you would have clearly shown an uptrend from 2009 to 2015. And then there were periods where it would correct and go into a pullback. Some of those I mentioned were 50%, 30%. That would have shown up as a pullback. We would have trimmed that position. If it had gone to a downtrend, we'd have sold the position. And then we would have been patient, not buying it too soon, waiting for the snapback to occur. Once the snapback occurs, we might start a position. Hopefully it graduates to an uptrend where we can double the position and then let the winner run again. And so as another example, I think in terms of managing our risk was the work from home stocks.
Right.
So the work from home stocks, before they were called that, we owned a bunch of those in 2019 and going into 2020 because they had fantastic operating momentum. They had fantastic price momentum. And then here comes along the pandemic and throws fuel onto the existing fire. And these things went crazy, as everyone knows.
Right.
Right? And so they went up so much, in fact, that people were just in denial that they could go any further, constantly saying the price of sales are too high. The PE, if they even have one, is too high. But we've known from experience that once you get on board of this huge winners like this in particular, these work from home stocks, you have to let them ride. The vaccine news came out, though, November 2020. And they started getting whacked.
The economy was going to reopen again.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. So we're not going to be sitting in our house using all the stocks associated with the work from home stocks. So we saw that show up in pullbacks. And we started to sell them, and we started selling them pretty quickly, dramatically. And then in February of 21, for the growth stocks that got spared, some of that damage of the work from home stocks, the growth stocks really started to go down in February of 21. Mm-hmm. And so we found ourselves again selling stocks. Now, some of these stocks, when we're selling them, they're down 20% off the high. And it might seem like, wow, you didn't do a very good job of that, but we know we're never going to pick the exact bottom and top. That's just not what this system or any system, I don't think, can do consistently. But we're trying to get the turn and trend. And so we sold it down 20, but we may have been up hundreds of percent. And then more importantly, after we sold it, the stocks continue to decline and we're down a further 40 to 60%.
Yeah.
That's how we dampen the volatility a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, often though, that first leg down, is the beginning of a much more painful sell-off, at least in some of these more highly innovative growth stocks. Okay. We covered a lot here. And so with that, I think we're at the end of this episode, and I'll just say thanks to Vernon. Great stuff. We'd love to have you back again sometime to continue this conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to coming back.
Sure. I think we covered some of the key points around price momentum, and most importantly, how valuable it can be, particularly in growth or innovation investing, for managing risk, avoiding behavioral biases, and also as an alpha driver when it's used in concert with operating momentum. Again, for listeners wanting to learn more about Lord Abbett's view on innovation and price momentum, we'd encourage you to watch the P&I webinar replay that is available on the insights section of lordabbett.com. Please also keep an eye out for the white paper coming out shortly on this topic. And for any information you're looking for around these pieces or on our innovation capabilities, please reach out to your Lord Abbett representative. And so we'll leave it there. This has been the Active Investor Podcast, and thank you for listening.
Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. Fundamental analysis attempts to identify stocks offering strong growth potential at a good price by examining the underlying company's business, as well as conditions within its industry or in the broader economy. Technical analysis is a trading discipline employed to evaluate investments and identify trading opportunities by analyzing statistical trends gathered from trading activity, such as price movement and volume. A moving average is a technique often used in technical analysis that smooths price histories by averaging daily prices over some period of time. Meme stocks are company shares on the stock market that have gone viral because of their popularity on the internet, especially via online messaging boards. Momentum investing is a trading strategy in which investors buy securities that are rising and sell them when they look to have peaked. Having a long position on a security means that you own the security. Investors maintain long security positions in the expectation that the stock will rise in value in the future. The opposite of a long position is a short position. A short position is generally the sale of a stock you do not own. Investors who sell short believe the price of the stock will decrease in value. Mentions of specific companies are for reference purposes only and are not meant to describe the investment merits of, or potential, or actual portfolio changes related to, securities of those companies. Unless otherwise noted, all discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies. The credit quality of the securities in a portfolio is assigned by a nationally recognized statistical rating organization, or NSRO, such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, or Fitch, as an indication of an issuer's creditworthiness. Ratings range from AAA, which is the highest, to D, which is the lowest. Bonds rated BBB or above are considered investment grade. Credit ratings BB and below are lower rated securities, or junk bonds. High yielding, non-investment grade bonds, or junk bonds, involve higher risks than investment grade bonds. Adverse conditions may affect the issuer's ability to pay interest and principal on these securities. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. The value of investments in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. Generally, when interest rates rise, the price of debt securities fall, and when interest rates fall, prices generally rise. The municipal market can be affected by adverse tax, legislative, or political changes, and by the financial condition of the issuers of municipal securities. Investments in non-U.S. or emerging market securities, which may be adversely affected by economic, political, or regulatory factors and subject to currency volatility and greater liquidity risk. The value of investments in equity securities will fluctuate in response to general economic conditions and changes in prospects of particular companies and/or sectors in the economy. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market conditions or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered.
The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given instrument, idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. It is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is
unless otherwise noted, all discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies. The credit quality of the securities in a portfolio is assigned by a nationally recognized statistical rating organization, or NSRO,